Hey, Mike Valenti here, host of Cash the Ticket alongside my partner, Jim Costa. It's really simple. Are you tired of podcasts claiming they're a bunch of pro bettors when they live in their mommy's basement? Are you tired of podcasts that claim they hit 80% of the games when really they just lose like most of us? Then Cash the Ticket's the spot for you. We're real. We're transparent. We're having a hell of a good time with it. And we sit there and we're there for the sweat with you guys. We're just trying to figure it out just like you. Follow and listen to Cash the Ticket on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app. Streaming live on YouTube as well at the Team 980. It is just after 5 o'clock, which means we are 27 minutes away from our Take Command Tape Tuesday. And we are right now ready for a Tischler Tuesday.
Today's top story, from the perspective of someone who's there.
You are looking live.
This just in.
Not my beat.
Mitchell, how are we doing, my friend?
We are doing fantastic on this Tuesday. How are you?
I'm doing well. The vibes are good. It was so funny. You know, yesterday we took calls in our Tell the Truth Monday. We just took an hour of calls here on a Tuesday. And yesterday we had people calling and apologizing for what they said about Adam Peters and some of the moves made in the offseason. And then we just took, 10, 11 calls over the last hour, and 90% of them were, I was super encouraged. And the one that wasn't was, I'm kind of encouraged. Nobody discouraged. Does everyone realize that they lost? Not saying that I actually disagree. It's just, do you ever thought you'd see the day that the Washington fan base would be this ecstatic with kind of how things are going, that a 30-23 loss to the Ravens is like, no, we're good.
I am so proud of the fan base for recognizing that. It's been great to see this kind of turn amongst the fans and not needing to win every single game and pounding the table for losses and wanting to fire people. And I think you see that turn in the Commanders locker room, because post game the guys were kind of angry. They thought they had a chance to win and they didn't. And in years past we would have seen a team that was just happy to compete, and you know, they would have been in the locker room and they're like, hey, you know, we were pretty close with them, and you know, think that we lost or whatever. So I think, you know, just this culture change that this team has been trying to do for the last 5 years or whatever, 6 years, I think, is finally taking place, and you're starting to see it amongst the fan base too. It's incredible to watch.
Mitch Tischler, of course, co-host of the Beltway Football Podcast with JP Finley, with us here on the Hoffman Show. And I know you and JP did a quasi-emergency episode yesterday in response to the John Allen news, and I thought you guys had some good stuff to say on it. So let's go through a little bit of where we go now with this Commanders D-line. Of course, Allen out for the year with the torn pec, as I think everybody listening knows, that news out yesterday. Where does Washington go to replace Allen? What of what he provides can they replace, and what takes a hit no matter who replaces him?
Yeah, I mean, listen, John Allen's athleticism is relatively unmatched, particularly amongst this front four that the Commanders have, and this group that they have on the D-line. And you're not going to be able to replace that immediately. But I do think one place that they might be a little bit better in is potentially against the run between the tackles. I like Fedarian Mathis's big body. I like that he kind of eats up blocks. He'll allow guys like Frankie Luvu, Bobby Wagner to flow a little bit more, I think. I guess we'll see it, you know, as we get through these games. The Chuba Hubbard and this Panthers run attack has been pretty good the past couple weeks. But at the end of the day, you're not going to replace John Allen. And ultimately, I think the biggest place that's going to take a hit is just going to be the reps, the amount of snaps that Daron Payne, Johnny Duden, Fedarian Mathis are going to have to take. And I think they're going to look to probably try and bring somebody in. Certainly, Sheldon Day has a lot of experience, played last year in Cleveland, has been up and down on active roster, I think he'll get the immediate call-up. But this D-line across the board is pretty beat up. I mean, Dorrance Armstrong got hurt. He's having some imaging this week, which is, you know, never a great thing. Javonte John-Baptiste hurt his ankle. You know, obviously, the John Allen news, Cleveland Farrell's coming back after missing a couple weeks. I mean, this is a group that's going to be tested now, because you're going to have a lot of young guys who are going to have to step up and play right away. And quite frankly, as much as I'm excited about seeing Fedarian on the field a little more for some of the run stuff, I want to see what Johnny Newton has. I mean, he dominated last year in college. He's obviously had a couple injuries coming up here. I think that he's going to be an interesting step in for John Allen, and talk about getting thrown into the fire. Here we go.
No, it's such a good point. And, you know, the thing is, Newton and Mathis, kind of where their strengths are completely different. And John Allen is almost dead in the middle of the two of them. Phil's ability to just stand up a blocker, chin a guard, just stop movement and be in the way is great, because you need that. You know, there's been a couple of games this year where the yards before contact numbers are pretty high for Washington, where running backs are getting 2, 3, 4 yards down the field before anybody gets a hand on them. And a guy like Big Phil can help stop that. But there's also some plays that you see it on Sunday before John goes out, that balls get into the perimeter and John Allen's able to stalk it down. That kind of mobility is not something Fedarian Mathis has. It is what Johnny Newton has, but he's one of the guys who's getting knocked back 4 or 5 yards. So I'm very curious to see what the rotation looks like and who they match with, because I think part of what's worked for them, to the extent that anything's worked, is the Newton-Mathis combo thus is good. You have one of the big guys and one of the smaller guys, and that's been able to work. Now, how do each of those guys pair with Payne? And then whoever's not with Deron, like, what do you match with that? And whether that's Ndubuisi, their international pathway player guy who gets called up, whether it's Day, whether it's someone they bring in, I'm curious kind of how they try to fill all of the gaps, because the two pairings they had, I thought, were very well matched.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. And on top of it, we're seeing a lot of Deron Payne, John Allen, and Johnny Newton on the field at the same time. So it'll be interesting to see what they do. They get F.A. Obata back, who's more of a defensive end, but has certainly played on the inside some. And in obvious, you know, running downs, you'll see F.A. on the edge there. It's going to be interesting to see what these guys do. But you know what? I mean, these second-round picks, you know, Johnny Newton, we haven't seen enough from. It's been, you know, 6 games. But Fedarian, you know, we're a couple of years into this thing and haven't seen a whole lot from Big Phil. So I'm cautiously optimistic that, you know, potentially the run defense might improve a little bit, at least, you know, between the guards right up the middle. Because like you said, Big Phil really can cause some chaos there. So it's going to be interesting to see what they do there.
Mitch Tischler with us, of course, Beltway Football Podcast here on the Team 980. So, to me, Mitch, when you look at the defense on Sunday and what happened against Baltimore, a lot of the consternation is directed towards Benjamin St. Juice in the secondary, and there's some issues all around the secondary. I don't even know that St. Juice was the worst corner that they had on Sunday, but I'm not here to, for a third straight day, defend the honor of Benjamin St. Juice. The biggest problem, I think, was the pass rush. There's just not a lot of pressure. How much of that do you think is a long-term problem, and how much of that was a Baltimore is very well equipped to not allow pressure problem?
I think that was by design almost. They haven't gotten a lot of pressure this year, period, so it's hard to really stand up here and say by design, but I think they really wanted to try and keep Lamar in the pocket, and by keeping him in the pocket, you can't have guys rushing up, you know, around the outside of the tackles. You're kind of trying to hem him in while also getting pressure, you know. With the John Allen injury, like, we know what kind of player John can be, and we've certainly seen it over the, you know, 7 years, 6 years that he's been here, but he hasn't had a great season, you know, and I don't want to, you know, kick a guy when he's down, but I don't know that the pass rush is going to, you know, be hurt that much by John Allen not being there, because neither he or Deron have particularly done a good job of getting to the quarterback, you know, at least since week one when Deron had the 5 pressures, I believe. But I think that, you know, the Dorrance injury, the Cleveland Farrell coming back, Dante Fowler's done a good job the past couple of weeks of getting there. I think when you look at this as a whole, this isn't a group that you expect is going to have, you know, multi-double-digit sack players on it. So it's going to be a war of attrition here. And as we talk about all these injuries, you know, Jamin Davis is sitting there, you know, being inactive the past couple weeks. I think that, you know, if these injuries are what we think they are, Jamin might have an opportunity to play, and maybe his speed can get around the edge and surprise some people.
Yeah, I mean, he certainly should be back on the field with what they're going to need, assuming that either Jean-Baptiste or Armstrong is out, but we'll see. Hopefully they're not. I mean, the thing is, I think about Armstrong and Allen both, they were starting to really come on the last couple weeks. I thought they played significantly better, and so to see them both go out in this Baltimore game hurts. I also just, you know, the Baltimore game highlights, I think, where Allen might be missed moving forward is Baltimore, because Patrick Ricard is such a unique piece and he can block a defensive end on his own. There's some of these play action shots and some of these longer developing plays where they're able to double team Allen and Payne and trust Ricard on an edge and, you know, chip help on, let's say, on the other edge. And most teams can't do that. They don't have a fullback who can block a defensive end. And now if you don't have to double, or if you don't have to double not Daron Payne, right, whether that's Newton or Phil, that becomes a lot easier to pass protect. And so this is where I think Johnny Newton has a huge chance to be impactful is, hey, Daron Payne's going to get double teamed. He's definitely the best player on that line right now. So if you get the one-on-ones, like you gotta handle your business. Otherwise, this secondary is going to be left out to dry, and you're going to see a lot more big explosive plays like you saw on Sunday. That's I think, where you miss Allen is he's still respected. And part of the reason his sack numbers I don't think are as good is because he does get a lot of attention still.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. It's going to be teams are going to shade towards Daron Payne, but they're also got to keep in mind Dante Fowler had a huge game against the Ravens. I mean, he had two sacks, definitely a couple quarterback hits. He had a couple TFLs. I mean, he had a really nice game, and his speed is something that most defensive ends don't have, and especially when you get against the right tackle, you know, he can really take advantage of it. So Joe Witt's going to have an interesting, decision or plan to come up with. How do you get a pass rush with, you know, two or three guys that you know other teams are going to key on? And that, like you said, with Johnny Newton, he's going to have an opportunity because he's going to be one-on-one with a guard pretty much every pass rush. And if he's able to get some pressure and, you know, muck up a little bit of the inside of that game, that could be a game changer for how teams have to defend the defensive line.
Yeah, for sure. I do. I don't disagree with you that Dante Fowler had a really good game. And obviously, one of his sacks was just a monster move. The other sack, he did get pancaked on the play, which is, I don't know how many times in NFL history a player has been pancaked and gotten a sack on the same play, but he got pancaked. Lamar ran around long enough for him to get up, and then he finished the sack, which, great tenacity. Like, it's ultimately a compliment to the competitiveness and the finish. But I did kind of chuckle watching that one back on tape, Mitch, because I was like, there can't be many times that's happened.
No, I mean, it is kind of funny that's how it came about. But, you know, we talked last week a little bit about kind of the skill position players on offense and how they were blocking in the run game all the way down the field. I think plays like that are the ones, you know, and then this the Dante Fowler sack, you're seeing what Dan Quinn wants out of these guys. You're seeing him, you know, his influence on their, you know, play on the field. And like you said, the tenacity and the get after net, not quitting. I mean, those are the things that you love to see, because you look at this game and, you know, against the Ravens, the defense couldn't stop them. They had no running game without Brian Robinson. The offensive line had, you know, a tough day with the Ravens knowing they could just pin back their ears and get after him. You had Jaden against the world, and you were within a one-score game for, you know, the majority of that game, which is super impressive. And I think why you see, you know, fans and folks excited about what's happening here in Washington.
Yeah, no doubt about it. For whatever it's worth, on the year, Dorrance Armstrong, according to PFF, has their best pass rush grade, 20.6 win rate. Fowler, 11.4. Next highest is Furrell at 6.0. This doesn't count Luvu. This is just their edge players. So definitely going to be a big loss if Armstrong is out, and Fowler certainly one of the guys that's going to have to step up there. All right. Speaking of the offense, Mitch Tischler with us here on the Hoffman Show. What did you learn about Jaden Daniels, if anything, on Sunday?
I love this. This is the first time that we saw him since the Bucs game have to play from behind and try and catch up. And I just loved his demeanor on the field and the way he went about it. He wasn't back there trying to get 13 points with one throw and, you know, taking unnecessary chances down the field. He stayed calm, cool, collected in the pocket. He made good throws. He made reads. You know, the touchdown pass to Terry in the corner of the end zone on fourth down was just awesome. It's every week he impresses me more and more, and every time he gets put in a new situation that could be perceived as high pressure or difficult, he just slides right through and doesn't blink. And I think that just says so much about his maturity and, you know, where he is with his confidence and with his offense and with his team. And I think you see it permeate, you know, all layers of this team. You see everybody kind of, you know, being cool and staying and keeping their heads together. And that's an important thing, especially when you're playing, you know, big time games like they did last week against the Ravens.
For sure. And the fact that he's able to do it without a run game is pretty damn impressive against a Baltimore team that is very, very good. How much of that lack of a run game did you think was either execution by Washington or lack of commitment by the play caller in Kliff, or just Baltimore being one of the better run-stopping teams in the league?
Yeah, I think it's Baltimore is one of the better run-stopping teams, you know, in the league. And I think early on, you know, when you're getting 1-2 yards a carry, it's tough to kind of continue pressing that when on the other side of the field, the Ravens are, you know, going up and down the field and scoring. Early in the game, I thought, you know, despite the offense sputtering, I thought they stayed solid and didn't try and, you know, change their identity to match what they were playing against. And as the game went on, you know, you ended up in a situation in the third, fourth quarter where you're kind of going up and down the field trying to keep up with them. So you're going to get into a pass-heavy script. But, you know, Austin Ekeler averaged, what, 2 yards a carry or so. And even Jaden, I think, you know, was under five for the first time. They couldn't run the ball. They couldn't get the ball moving on the ground at all. And at the end of the day, they ended up, you know, having to throw the ball at least it was 35 times and not 50 times like last year with Eric Bieniemy. But, you know, what I liked was Noah Brown finding ways to get open. And when he wasn't open, he made some really nice catches. Zach Ertz is always finding soft spots of zones. I mean, you're just seeing this team. We're getting to learn about these players, and we're getting to learn about, you know, kind of the offensive scheme and how Kliff is kind of getting these guys open against different looks.
For sure. Ertz, by the way, over 4 yards per separation or of separation per route targeted. Terry was 1.64, and both of them had great games in their own way, which just shows you a quarterback that trusts their guy or his guys and knows when to hit them. All right, last question for you, Mitch. And this one, admittedly, may be a little sports talk radio-y, but hey, we are a sports talk radio show.
Oh, boy.
So here's my question. But I actually don't think, like, I actually don't think it's terrible. Otherwise, I wouldn't ask it. Sometimes I will ask it as I laugh through the question. This is a somewhat serious one. Is this weekend's game against Carolina actually more important in terms of what we think about this team moving forward than the Baltimore game?
It's funny you say that. I in our post-game live show, I talked about this on our pod today with John Allen. I talked about it a little bit. We've seen burgundy and gold teams over the years, you know, maneuver the bet, if you will, when in situations like this, after playing a good team, come back home, expected to win, and just, you know, don't come out and play hard. And I think, you know, we talked about the sack from Dante Fowler and, you know, that effort play. I think that's what Dan Quinn has instilled in these guys. I don't think they're going to show up and not be ready to go against the Panthers team that is much better offensively since they made the change at quarterback. But I think that, you know, if you wanted to call last week a litmus test for, you know, where this team was, fine. I think this week might be even more of it because you got to know where you stand. And good teams put their foot on the throat of bad teams early on in games, put them away, don't give them a hope. And that's something that I expect Washington's going to do on Sunday. It's going to be an awesome atmosphere, 4 o'clock game, all the Daryl Green festivities. It's going to be great, and I expect Jaden to come out and have a big-time game against a defense that hasn't really proven to be able to stop anybody lately.
I totally agree with you. I actually don't think I would have asked the question if I didn't at least partially, if not wholeheartedly, think that it's true, which is to say that if they go out and lay an egg, like, okay, why? Did they get a little too cocky? Did they start believing their own hype? Because, I mean, we were talking about this earlier. This is such a media nerd thing. But, like, Ian and Charles are calling this game. Like, that's the number two CBS crew. And it ain't because the Panthers are here. And then you got Nance and Romo again, and now this 425 game probably in 2 weeks. And it tells you kind of what the national media feels about it, and the decision makers at the networks feel about it, that Jaden and this team are so box office that they're like, we got to send our best. We got to make sure we get eyeballs on this thing. And so if you go out against Carolina with all the eyeballs and you're a 7.5-point favorite, like all that kind of stuff, and you don't play up to your level, that tells me there's a little bit of a crack that not, and even if that happens, Mitch, I don't think they can't fix it, which is also, I think, speaks very well to this team. But I don't think it's going to happen in the first place. And the fact that we who have covered this football team for a long time in this town and seen a lot of teams that were like, oh, here comes the fall. The fact that we don't see it, I think, is probably a good thing moving forward, or fodder for Cold Takes Exposed next week.
Exactly. I think this is, I agree with you that if they don't play well, it is fixable. But at the same time, I will be very disappointed in, you know, the prep and the coaching staff and the players, and would probably change my outlook on what I think of the season if they do come out and lay an egg. I think that, you know, it's important to assert your dominance when you can, and this is an opportunity for Jaden and this Commanders team to do so.
No doubt. And, you know, what you can't fix is the L. And they've built themselves a nice cushion here in the standings, and this is an opportunity to add one to the win column, and you don't get those back even if you can learn the lessons, if you will, after. For more lessons, including that if you finish a podcast, you get a beer, listen to the Beltway Football Show. Let Beltway Football Podcast, search for it with, of course, Mitch and JP Finley, anywhere you get your pods, and the Monumental Sports app. Mitchell, always a pleasure, sir. See you on Sunday, and talk to you back on the radio here next week.
I'm looking forward to it.
All right, it's Mitch Tischler, everybody, with us here on the Hoffman Show. Coming up next, Take Command, Tape Tuesday. How did Jaden Daniels play through the lens of Logan Paulson? The answer next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey, Mike Valeni here, host of Cash the Ticket alongside my partner, Jim Costa. It's really simple. Are you tired of podcasts claiming they're a bunch of pro bettors when they live in their mommy's basement? Are you tired of podcasts that claim they hit 80% of the games when really they just lose like most of us? Then Cash the Ticket's the spot for you. We're real, we're transparent, we're having a hell of a good time with it. And we sit there and we're there for the sweat with you guys. We're just trying to figure it out just like you. Follow and listen to Cash the Ticket on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
With the second pick in the 2024 NFL Draft, the Washington Commanders select Jaden Daniels.
Jaden Daniels holds the keys to the Commanders' future.
Daniels is going to walk it in for the touchdown.
Take Command holds the keys to knowing how he played.
In the big moment when you needed to make plays, he just consistently made plays.
It's time for a Take Command Tape Tuesday.
Jaden Daniels just lays it out there perfectly. What a throw.
On the Hoffman Show.
Jaden was definitely more leveraged in this game, as the running game was not nearly as effective. Also, you're just leveraged as, hey, those guys over there wearing purple, really good. Lots of challenges. Lots of guys that you got to be aware of. The Roquan Smiths, the Kyle Hamiltons, Marlon Humphreys. You got dudes that got all kinds of awards over on that side of the football. Ultimately, Logan, how do you think he played in what might have been his most difficult game as a pro?
Hey, I mean, I think he did a great job. I think, you know, if we're being nitpicky, I already mentioned kind of some of that run game stuff early, because in addition to the GT, which would have been a touchdown, they had a quarterback draw where he could have thrown the bubble to OZ or run the draw. And the draw, man, is so open. And a man of his rushing ability is going to score. And obviously, that's the first drive. So that's, instead of three, it's seven, whatever. And you can kind of nitpick that. But I think after that, kind of early, it was probably the first two drives, kind of like, oh, what's going on? But I think he settled in and just did an excellent job. And we talked about some of the stuff Cliff did to help him out with some of those kind of trick, kind of screen, explosive opportunities, which are great. But I thought he did a great job on the Terry touchdown of reading that out, throwing with great anticipation. I thought he maybe the best throw of the year for him to Zach Ertz on the 3rd and 10 in the red zone, where he just, it's like a little pull concept. And Roquan Smith is like right in the throwing lane, but you throw that sucker with a kind of a, you know, what is that, like a 3 o'clock arm angle to get around the pressure of the guard. And it was just one of just a tremendous throw over the middle of the field, seeing the middle of the field, great anticipation. And obviously the explosive plays down the field on the sail concepts, the deep crossers, sitting in the pocket, there's free runners sometimes. I just thought he showed a lot of maturity, you know, as a passer. And I know we've seen that element of that, but I feel like he just took a next step. And there's always been kind of, yeah, he did a good job, but, and in this game, it was kind of all on him. And I thought he just did an excellent job executing. And then the accuracy, the comeback to Noah Brown, where that ball is placed like right where Noah Brown can get a great catch by Noah Brown. The hitch, to Terry, where it's right in that spot. The way he kind of floated that ball out to Terry for the touchdown. Great job by Terry catching that football in that on that kind of slant and go. There were so many good throws, so many high leverage plays. That was a 4th down, the 3rd and 10 to Zach. And it just kind of, he just sits in there. And I got to give credit to the offensive line. I thought they did a great job in more obvious passing situations. We talked about how Cliff helped them out with some of the protection plan, which was awesome to see, but they have to execute it. And then the receivers did a great job executing. I do think the one thing that kind of stuck out to me when comparing, you know, obviously Baltimore's defense to the Commanders' defense is there were a lot of plays where there was not a lot of air in the secondary. It's just tight. It's just tight, hard throws. And so that's something where you kind of say, hey, you know, if you have another like stud wideout or another guy that can really create separation versus man-to-man coverage, this is probably a little bit easier. But I will say, like we talked about Zach a little bit too, it's like Zach, his ability to run routes and stem guys up. He had we mentioned the sail route already, but he had a deep kind of post dig that gets covered up early in the game when Noah Brown runs it, or when Diami runs it, excuse me. But he runs up, pushes vertical, gets the guy to open his hips, then comes across and ends up being a great, big explosive play for the offense. So I was really impressed. Obviously, there was some limitations, like I said, early in the game with some of the run decision making. But as a passer and as a competitor, I thought, and he was just really locked in, and maybe one of his best performances of the year so far. And I think when you listen to people in the national media, I think they would also agree with that.
Yeah, no doubt. You know, people want to see him throw over the middle of the field more throughout the season. He does that. He's 7 of 9 in the middle third of the field in this game. And you mentioned the separation. I'm trying to pull this up real quick. Next Gen Stats Game Center is loading for me. But the separation for Terry was on average, I think it was 1.6 yards of separation.
Yeah, is that?
That is tight. That is not necessarily great. For Terry McLaurin. 1.64 is the number. And yet he was able to find him in key situations. And that's something that we've wished quarterbacks would do for years and say, like, look, Terry's a good contested catcher. So like throw him, and not just like 50-50 jump ball situations. Like if you throw it a tight window on a hitch, he'll use his body and he's a body catcher and he'll shield off the defender and he'll come down with it. And for years, it's like, just throw the ball to Terry. He'll make it happen. And Jaden does that. And it for Terry, he had kind of a weird day in that he only had 6 catches for like 50 yards. Obviously, he's got 2 touchdowns, which are pretty impactful. But I would have sworn he had like 8 catches for $140 because that's the kind of impact that he had in the game. But then you got Zach, you know, 4+ yards of separation. So good day for him on the old route running department. But he just finds ways, and hopefully these guys can continue to get better. But I think Jaden's decision making was so good because there's even times where I'm like, that is the only option. That is the only answer for him in this thing. And then Baltimore does a good job of rallying and tackling. There's one play where like Kyle Hamilton comes scotch free on a blitz and he lofts it over to Austin Eckler. And, you know, some of the previous weeks, like that's become a 40-yard game because, you know, guys, in a blitz situation, they don't have the bodies behind and Eckler makes one guy miss and all of a sudden he's out. Baltimore rallies and tackles for a gain of 2 yards, but it's the right decision by Jaden. And I think that ability to quickly
decipher things and show off, I guess is a good way to put it. His processing speed just gives you so much hope for what he really is moving forward, that this hasn't been some kind of product of bad defenses making it easy on him. No, even against a great defense in Baltimore, he is making excellent decisions. And then the accuracy, and just, I think his way to see the game, the combination of those two things, right? Like, I process not only where the ball needs to go from this receiver to that receiver, but like, I can put it on the correct shoulder. I can put it down in a way. Like, he just has almost like a supernatural way of seeing the game to know exactly what's supposed to happen and the physical abilities to make it happen. And that is rare, special, and was on full display in this game. Again, even though they ultimately wound up with the loss.
No, I agree. And I think, obviously, he wasn't perfect. There was a couple times where I'm like, oh, like, step into that throw, deliver the ball. But I think on the whole, we saw a really nice, you know, development of him, you know, and kind of maturity. And especially, again, in that first half was a little bit clunky at times. I think there was a check down to Ozzie where he kind of opens his hips and throws it, and it's a little bit fluttery and kind of short. He catches the ball, but you're like, oh, that could have been a bigger gain if you get the ball out there. But those plays are going to happen. You know, those are plays that are going to happen. Right. But I think it's the other stuff, the high level stuff that we've seen, that's really cool. And I was just thinking about it. I think it was their third drive of the game where he throws that ball to Ozzie, and Ozzie, you know, ends up dropping the football on second and 10, but that's a first down. There's another example where good process, tight, and the tightness of the windows, I think, was the other thing that was impressive. It's just like he's kind of layering them. They're NFL throws, you know, and I think that's something that that really stuck out to me, is just his ability to kind of say, hey, I can do this. I don't need to be running around. I don't need to be scrambling. I don't need to have the quarterback run stuff necessarily. And while that stuff's helpful, like, I thought this was a really good example of you know, some of the higher level processing. And is there room for improvement? 100%. But I think this, to me, was
a sixth game. I'd hope so.
Yeah, this was a big step for me in terms of just watching the film and just being like, oh, this is big time stuff.
One thing that I wanted to ask you about is, are there some kind of variations on route concepts you are familiar to that are bent to the talent of this team? What I mean by that is this. Romo talked a lot on the broadcast about certain situations, alignments, whatever it is. We're like, oh, expect the slant here, and then they throw a hitch. And Cliff talks a lot about players, not plays. And you see that in big situations. It's like, okay, let's get the ball to Terry here. Let's give Jaden the throw that he wants. And we know that he is very, very fond of throwing hitches and goes because he did it a ton in college. Like, he's very, very good at throwing them. We see some of the arm angles and some of the ball placement on those versus some of the slants, which have to come in traffic. And maybe they're not as easy to win for the wide receivers. But in the West Coast systems or some of the other systems around the league, or whatever Romo seemed to be familiar with, like, those concepts have slants, and instead Cliff just changes the isolated route to a go or to a hitch. Are you seeing some of that where Cliff is bending this offense to Jaden's skill set, and he's making Cliff, I won't say right, but like rewarding Cliff for those decisions?
I don't know if I've seen any concepts where I've been like, oh, this is something that I've never seen before. You know, like the isolated hitch, like, for example, like when I was with Kyle, Sean, you name your OC, like, this is very common. You get 3x1 away, right? And it's a quick game concept. So, like, stick, lion, dragon, whatever you want to call over there to the left where the three receivers are. Mm. The backside player usually has an isolation hitch. And what you'd call that is like a thunder. So, if it's free access, you run a 5-yard stop. If it's press, you run an 8-yard stop. If it's cover two, you get in the, you know what I'm saying? Like, they want to kind of, or you signal that guy. And so, I think, like, you've seen a little bit of that, like, Cliff does that more, right? He says, oh, I want to get away, give the quarterback a nice isolation read there. I think you see a lot of what I would call spin, so like double in, or second end is what some people call it. So Zach will run the first one, Tara run the second one, and I've been in a lot of offenses, and we don't run as much spin as this team does because I think Jaden likes the matchup of Zach Ertz on that first spin, and he's hit him a couple times on it. So you're going to call that more, because he likes it, right? And he feels comfortable with it. I think the play action comeback is something everyone in the league runs. But I think when they need a play action shot or kind of get on base kind of completion, that's something Cliff calls. Like last week against Cleveland, they called it. It was their first kind of big chunk to Terry on the left side. Or not big chunk, because they had but like in terms of play action shot, that was their first one. They ran it. They tried to run it this week to Noah Brown. Noah Brown gets covered up, but that they like that quite a bit. That shows up a lot. So I do think they have plays that Jaden likes and feels comfortable with in terms of quick game. Holy cow, man. If they need a play and it's second and five, they're going to run spot like 9 out of 10 times. So spot is just a little flare and then like a 5 yard sit. And I think those are plays you start seeing guys like really gravitate to and really understand and like really own. And I think that's been kind of cool to watch is the ownership that they've taken with that. But, you know, I've run those plays. It's just this team seems to like them more and be more ready to execute them than other places I've been.
Last question on Jaden. The quarterback run game was not effective for the first time, and he couldn't scramble for the first time. Like, there's just not a big rushing number next to his name for the first time as a pro. Was it purely what Baltimore did? Like, how did they shut that element of Jaden's game down?
Well, like I said already, I think one of the things is when you're doing the quarterback run stuff, you got to make good decisions, especially when there's a zone read element to it, right? We're running read GT, when we're running, you know, when I have the option to run a quarterback draw and there's a bubble over here, I got to make sure that my number count's correct and I got to trust what I see. And I felt like he didn't make the correct decisions on a couple of those things. Obviously, they run the quarterback, what I would call truck, like where you're pulling guys to the perimeter and he's running in the low red, which has been great for us. And I think one of the things, Baltimore just played that well. They're a fast defense. They're going to cut up angles. They're going to fit blocks better. They're a better defense. They're going to do that stuff better. And they did. And so then obviously, like, when it's time to scramble for Jaden Daniels, I think the other thing is they rush with good integrity. They're fast on the defensive end position. They'd kind of have like a pseudo spy in there sometimes. Obviously, there's a couple times where Roquan's right there. And that was it. And the other thing is I felt like early on some of those like 2 minute situations, the first couple drives in the third quarter, like he's throwing with confidence. And so he's not even getting the opportunity to scramble. So I think that was another thing that really showed up for me is the total number of scramble opportunities was limited by what they were doing defensively. But I also thought Jaden, because of how he was throwing the football, didn't need to do it as much. And I think that's all good. And I think if there's one thing I'd say, hey, Jaden, look, let's make sure we really dial in this week. And look at me sitting in my office talking about what I would tell Jaden Daniels is like, let's just clean up the read stuff when we're doing it in the run. Like that's the only thing I would say, just to make those plays a little bit more efficient for us, because it's going to help him in the long run be more efficient as a runner. It's going to help the offense be more efficient. But again, that's 4 plays, 5 plays that happened in the first quarter. And maybe that's him just settling in. Who knows? But that would be the only criticism I'd levy here. And the only thing I think that even would even provide an opportunity for this offense to slow down. Because outside of that, I think, again, like he threw the ball well and there just weren't a ton of scramble opportunities.
Yeah, there weren't a ton of misses. Just a couple happened in big spots like that. The drop for OZ, who's been really consistent this year. Like, he's a human being. This happens. And so there's a couple plays like that. Guys miss a block. Guys drop a ball. Jaden has the one overthrow to Noah, which is like the one time he got out to his right, he overthrows. And probably lucky that ball's not picked, but like that's the right decision. And so just a little higher level of execution and you're right there. And of course, if you don't have to score as many points. So with that, let's talk about the defense.
Want more from Craig and Logan? Subscribe now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. More Hoffman Show next on the Team 980 and the free Odyssey app.
It's Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app. There is a ton going on around the NFL on the field. I just mentioned a couple of the trades and what's trending. Also, as I look up on the screen, NFL Network's replaying the Raiders-Steelers game. Justin Fields runs in for a touchdown. Justin Fields apparently might not start this weekend. They might sit him for Russell Wilson. So we'll get to all of that coming up in our NFL News and Notes at 6:30. But we're gonna isolate this one, Anthony, before we get to our NFL tiers coming up at 6 p.m., Jerry Jones today on our sister station, 105.3 The Fan, down in Dallas. And he does a weekly hit down there because he can't help himself. He's the GM, the owner, mouthpiece. And I will say Jerry at times is very, very good at causing a stir that puts the attention and the onus on him and can take away from the attention and onus on the team. So that I will say, sometimes Jerry does play the game very well, even if the way he does it is to essentially be the rodeo clown. Everyone's, you know, the bucking bull is coming after Dak Prescott and Mike McCarthy and whatever. And then Jerry's like, look at me, look at me. And all of a sudden the bull's like, I'm going to look at you. And then Jerry's like, ole. You listen to this out there in Radio Land, and you tell me whether Jerry is being a rodeo clown or is the old man losing it a little bit. Either way, don't love this.
Jerry, 1970, a little different from this past off season in building the team we're talking about today, which there was a lot of criticism that you guys didn't add, didn't spend, and don't add, and don't spend, and are not aggressive enough with some of the problems that are still haunting the Cowboys today that we see play out on the field. That's the point of talking about the offseason.
Oh, I remember those criticisms very well. Okay, so what?
Or are they playing out be accurate?
What's your point? What's your point?
My point is, it seems like...
Let me tell you what I'll do. Let me tell you what I'll do about it. I will let us sit down and look at the decisions we've made over the last several years. Okay? I'll look at it. Now, if you think I'm interested in on a damn phone call with you over a radio and sitting here and throwing all the good out with the dishwater, you have got to be smoking something over there this morning.
Just a quick pause. Just because I'm petty. It's throw the baby out with the bathwater, not the good out with the dishwater. Nobody throws out dishwater. I mean, it's also 2024. Nobody throws out bathwater either. They both go down the drain. But the old... It's bathwater, not dishwater. Just... That's not the point.
I'm not. And I really don't. And I don't even want our listeners to listen to me. To talk about... This is not your job. Your job isn't to let me go over all the reasons that I did something and I'm sorry that I did it. That's not your job.
Well, my job is to ask
get
why.
A job, or I'll get somebody else to ask these questions, man.
All right. And that's where things get sideways is the, hey, I'm going to threaten the radio host. And there's a very tight partnership between 105.3 The Fan and the Dallas Cowboys. And I don't know what their current rights deal situation is, but the person who will ultimately decide where the Cowboys games air and all the programming and who gets Jerry and Steven's weekly radio hits, like Jerry Jones does have say over that. I do not think our bosses down at Odyssey in Dallas are going to let Jerry Jones decide who is and isn't on the radio. Nevertheless, the corporate bosses in New York and Philadelphia and all the other places that our bosses work. CK's doing pretty well in the company structure these days. We don't have too many bosses. Our guy's doing a good job. The point is... That's not cool from Jerry Jones. You know, threaten radio host job. And I Sean and RJ did a good job of, I think, diffusing the situation and just kind of going like, okay, guy, we know what you're doing here. But I would have loved for them to just go, then what is my job? If you think you know what my job is, you tell me. Because I think those guys were doing their job. Like, hey, you guys weren't very active in the offseason. Now you've got problems and you're out there saying like now is not the time to acquire players. And it's like, well, you didn't do anything in the time that you were supposed to acquire players. So, I don't know. Anthony, you're a professional radio producer. If your host asked that, you'd be like, good question, guys. I don't know what the more relevant question is, to be honest.
I don't either. I think that's a great question. I just think, you know, all the wheels are falling off in Dallas, and it sort of kind of starts at the top, and it seems as though he's lost all his marbles.
Yeah, I mean, here's the one thing I will give Jerry. Every time he seems like a senile old man who's lost it, the Cowboys still are, you know, the last 3 years before this one, they won 12 games every single year. So they did a lot of stuff right over the past bunch of years. And if Jerry wants to go over that, fine. But maintaining that is really hard. And they had opportunities to do things this offseason. And I think more importantly, they had things opportunities in previous offseasons to make things easier this offseason because their cap situation's a nightmare because they never extend the guys early. They always wind up paying their players the most money. Which, good for those guys, but they would have accepted lesser contracts earlier because the market wasn't as high. Dallas is always the last one, and then they give the money anyway. And whether it's Zeke all those years ago, there's been others before Zeke, but like Zeke kind of started this round of it where they waited and waited and even held out, and then Jerry gave him everything he wanted and more. And then it's like, well, there's a reason that you weren't going to pay the running back because running backs have a shelf life. Now, it's like they could have paid Dak Prescott a year or two ago. They could have played CeeDee Lamb earlier. Now they're going to probably play the same stupid game and win the same stupid prizes with Micah Parsons. And then those three are going to look around and be like, we don't have any other players. Unless Will McClay, their draft guru, bails them out again. And so it's just a repeat cycle of stupid in Dallas. And the thing is, if you don't do this stuff right, that's how you get stuck at being a 12-win team that doesn't go anywhere in the playoffs. If you want to actually advance, you got to do more. And so, yeah, I mean, look, I'm not going to go on against Jerry Jones of all people. I am not going to go on the don't you dare threaten the media rant, because Jerry Jones has been playing the game with the media and is more responsible for the growth of NFL media than arguably anybody else in the last 30 years in the entire league. I think Jerry understands the importance of the media, and the dictator has no clothes act of threatening radio hosts is I chalk that up as much to a gambit by Jerry, who might actually know what he's doing, than an old man that lost his marbles. It could be 50-50 of either at this point, but he's done that enough times to try to take the pressure off, because now, instead of talking about his terrible football team, we're talking about the stupid thing that he did on the radio. And he knows how to play that game.
Yeah.
But guess what, Anthony? So do we. NFL tier rankings, where we talk about Jerry's stupid football team and many other very bad football teams. And whether the Commanders have earned their spot in prime contenders, because they're not a bad football team. Next on The Hoffman Show.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey, Mike Valeni here, host of Cash the Ticket alongside my partner, Jim Costa. It's really simple. Are you tired of podcasts claiming they're a bunch of pro bettors when they live in their mommy's basement? Are you tired of podcasts that claim they hit 80% of the games when really they just lose like most of us? Then Cash the Ticket's the spot for you. We're real. We're transparent. We're having a hell of a good time with it. And we sit there and we're there for the sweat with you guys. We're just trying to figure it out just like you. Follow and listen to Cash the Ticket on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.